From LPM,
Louisville Public Media.
Support for LPM podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.
Welcome to Money Memories, the podcast designed to make money conversations less taboo, one money memory at a time. I'm your host, Alona, and each week I interview a different set of guests about their earliest or most impactful experiences with money and how it's affected their personal development. Let's jump in. On this episode, we're talking to Carly Kant, a Berlin-based drag queen. We talk about the challenges of measuring success in creative endeavors and how Carly has stepped into her own identity as a performer. So welcome, Carly Kant, to the Money Memories podcast. How are you doing?
Hi, Ilona. Thank you for having me. I'm doing pretty fine, sitting in my home office drag closet room here.
Wonderful. So, Carly, what is your first or most impactful money memory?
I think we would have to start with the first time I was actually booked to perform at a party.
Okay.
And it was a pretty big deal because they have quite a big event and a pretty big club. And they said, okay, it's January. It was, 2 years ago, January. And new year, new faces. And then they invited me to come and perform. Turns out, in the end, they invited me and another performer to perform for free so that they could book another drag queen to be DJing that was quite famous at the time, and they needed a little bit of a higher budget. So I think that was my first money memory, giving it my all. And no payback.
So this was at a club in Berlin. Correct me if I'm wrong, but there's a difference between drag shows in the US and in Europe. And I think it has to do with pay. Like in the US, people can like give money to the drag queens they're performing. Is it the same in Europe or no?
A little bit the same, but definitely different because our paper money starts at €5, which is quite a huge tip for a drag queen, and everything else is coins.
Right.
So it's just not the same vibe. The tipping culture, which is really fun because it's like a very direct feedback and response to the performance. And in Germany, it doesn't really work like that because we don't have this in the drag culture.
Okay.
But I would say if you're doing a club performance, you're paid by the club or the party organizer, and that's your fee. And some drink tickets, some guest list, good to go. And if it's more like a drag event, when people actually coming to see a drag show, and there's several performers, and that's the main theme of the night, then there will be a bucket going around in the middle, in the beginning of the show, something like that. And then the performers can split the money evenly.
I see. Thank you for explaining. So going back to your memory, it's interesting to me that your first drag money memory is one in which no money was involved. Can you talk a little bit more about how you incentivize yourself or what the motivation is for you to get your name, get your brand out there when there is that lack of direct, you know, monetary transactions?
So I think we have to do a little bit of a difference of full-time performers and half-time performers or whatever you may call it. There are definitely in Berlin as well drag performers that are just living off of it. And then there's queens like me, and I call it my luxury hobby. because you have to invest a whole lot into it. And even though you're paid for the shows, the turnover is pretty low, especially considering how much preparation goes into a number. Just like leave out all the costumes and the wigs and the makeup, but just preparing the number. Like I am doing everything. I get the music. I cut it into a mix. I choreograph a number. There's like so much time investment and mental investment and everything. it's basically impossible to reimburse this because if you're having drag queens at your party, you're definitely bringing life to it. You're definitely bringing vibes to it. A lot of people will have experiences with us and they will probably have good experiences and good memories about it. So if I'm here to boost up your party, obviously I have something from it because I do it as a passion, as a luxury hobby, as I call it. But I also want this to be like a fair exchange because you are taking money off of everybody who is coming in to have a great experience in your club. So if I'm part of that great experience for people, I don't want to make all the investments on my own and basically having no turnover. So for me, it doesn't really matter if it is 50 or 80 euro for the number. I want to be well taken care of. I want to be respected. I might come and have some cues for the lightning. Then I want the number to play off to so that the number works better. This is all part of respecting my art form. And yes, giving me your obolus, giving me a little something for it. This is also part of me feeling respected for the work I put in.
I think that's really interesting. It's a very different conversation around compensation. You know your salary and there's an industry standard, you know your worth. Was that an easy transition for you to make, or was that one that you had to get accustomed to after getting more involved and doing a couple of shows?
I think that it's like the beautiful thing about the duality of drag, because we can talk about this from the rational, human-centered view. But as soon as Carly comes out and the drag starts, everything doesn't matter anymore. The way I say it, Robin makes the money and Carly spends it.
That's awesome. I love that Robin makes the money and Carly spends it. So can you talk about how you first decided to become a drag performer? Like a little bit more in the evolution of Carly's history?
I think it was lying. Like the question I rather ask is, why did it take me so long? Everything has been pointing into this direction. I've always been a great fan of women. And yeah, I was interested in fashion and in drama and in shows and in performance. And I never really had a tool to let it all out. And I think in like when I like the town where I'm from, Saarbrücken, there's like a very, very little, I don't even want to say queer scene. It's like a small gay scene from what I have known. And no drag influences at all. And when I moved to Berlin, I think I was at one or two drag events in the beginning, but it was, I just didn't connect to it. And there was so much queer life to be discovered coming to Berlin. And there was no interaction points with me and drag queens really. But then, I mean, after a time, I started understanding that like, it's just like being a person. You can't do it right or wrong. You just have to do it your way. And at one point, I think I understood it also about being a drag queen. You can be your drag can be whatever you want to be. It's really like an extension of yourself. And this is when I got really, really interested and started digging into it.
As you've matured as a performer, as you've evolved, do you see it? How has the Carly Kant brand evolved alongside with it?
I think at a certain point, I realized that drag is like a bottomless pit because there's always something you can invest in. You saw I have beautiful wigs here. So you start with a little shitty wig and then you start with your first lace front and then you start with a better lace front. And then the next step would be human. There's so much. And I try to limit the, investments more and more from time to time. So I just try to like slow it down and try to put the investment into other types. Like what is new stuff I could try out? What is maybe a concept for a show that I can actually run? You know, like trying to switch the focus from the material point of view more so into, how you called it, the brand of Carly.
You mentioned how drag can be like a bottomless pit sometimes. Do you still believe there's a scene and an access point for people who want to be performers but don't necessarily have the monetary means to do so yet?
I can only speak from the Berlin perspective right now because I don't really like know how it plays out in the US. And so I would say as long, like what is important in a drag show for me is commitment and passion and a good story. These are the three things I'm looking for. And I don't really care if you airbrushed your makeup, if it's a human hair wig, or if your outfit was 5,000 euro. If you don't have those three in your number, people will turn away from it. And you can come on stage with a toilet paper dress. If you tear the house down, people are going to live for it. That's what I really, really love about the drag scene in Berlin. We have like people from all over the rainbow participating, and it's really about your story that you want to tell on stage. And this is something I really, really appreciate that we have here.
So what's your grand goal? What does success look like for Kali? Ultimate success.
I mean, I've been thinking about maybe applying for this Heidi Klum TV show, sending in a tape, but I was a little bit hesitant about if it's really what I'm aiming for, like having a history on reality TV. Yeah. There's some parts of the show that I really like. And then there's also some part of me that says, okay, girl, you're a graphic designer. I'm a one-stop shop. Most of the stuff I create somehow is by myself. So I rather want to explore how far I can go actually with my own talents. And I also work for a TV station. It's like, if I want to be on a TV show, I just should say everybody I'm having lunch with that I'm a drag queen, and they should put me on TV if this is really what I want to do. I think it would be more valuable for me if it comes out of my own drive. I really want to come out and produce my own show. I think that's quite nice, actually, being the HBIC, which is be the next natural step for Kali.
Do you have a goal of one day using the funds from Kali to reinvest into Kali, or do you envision this as remaining as a luxury hobby, as you call it?
I think it has, like, my perspective on the money has changed a little bit, because one of the Rue girls, Alaska Sanderfuck, actually gave me $1,000 randomly.
I remember that.
she had this like little action called Dollars for Divas, where you could slide into her DMs, and she was going to give away the money on a digital drag show. And so she PayPal'd me $1,000, which I found so cute and so nice. And I was thinking what to do with this money. And I thought it was so noble of her to support drag queens around the globe by giving away this money. And then me, somebody who is a luxury queen and doesn't need this to survive, which this was actually meant for, I felt it would be so selfish to go for a human hair wig. So actually I created like a account and just put this money on the side. And I thought, what would be a better way than to hire Berlin drag queens and Berlin drag performers from that money that I got? I think it's a nice idea just to put this on the side and use it to realize the dreams, because that's what drag is ultimately about, like living the fantasy.
Absolutely. I think it's interesting how you view risk-taking as a performer.
I mean, you mentioned the word risk. And one thing we really haven't talked about, like, financial risk is not really the biggest risk for a drag queen. I live just like right next to a really big station. There's always a lot of stuff going on. If I'm coming out of my house door 2 meters tall in a wig, smelling like a fresh flower, there's different risks that I put on myself. And being paid 40 or 70 euros is not the biggest risk for me when I step out that door. People spit in front of my feet. Luckily, I have never experienced more violence than that. But it's definitely risky to be a drag performer. Also in Berlin, yes, we are a queer capital, but still there's a lot of people who are not very open to cultures that are not theirs. And that's the real risks drag queens are taking. Startups are mostly concerned about their financial safety, and yeah. drag queens are not. That's like you look at that, it's really different. And also setting us apart from other artists, maybe we are not pop stars. We don't have a label behind us that will just like push and promo the first 2 years whatsoever it will take. And after that, we balance it out when you get your hits. It's not really like that. You just like have to give everything on your own, and then the little turnover there is, you have to manage on your own too. And it's like nobody really adding up on that.
Yeah.
And yeah, we live for the applause, applause, applause.
Do you see maybe one day being part of like a consortium? Would that be something that you aspire to, like creating your own mogul empire for a different type of drag queen as well? And to kind of give them a platform and give them that kind of like promo, the way you mentioned like a traditional label might?
I like the idea that you say, like showcasing other queens. And I think like with the drag show, it could definitely be that, like with the one concept, like the big concept, I wanted to call Next Level, because this drag show is going to be Next Level. So I think what I want to do with the show, at least, is like elevate the art form of drag to a new level in Berlin. That's definitely something. And about this like whole mogul thing, it's not really on my mind. I rather prefer having like smaller events. I was just like, I'm working on actually a crime dinner, Kali Khan crime dinner, which has like only very limited amount of person that can participate in it. But therefore, it also allows a very deep human interaction. And yeah, this is definitely the side I would rather focus on. Maybe the goal would be make drag of a less trivial thing to some mm-hmm. people, and actually show that we can create amazing art and amazing moments for people. And yeah, I think this is more the direction I would be working towards. Yeah.
That's wonderful. Well, in the meantime, where can people find your amazing art and amazing moments if they're interested in seeing and connecting with Kali Khan?
I do have an Instagram account. It's called Kali Khan. That's K-A-R-L-I-E, like the German first name Karl, and then Kant, like our beautiful philosopher, Immanuel Kant. That's K-A-N-T.
The philosopher, yes, of course. Do you have, I don't know, do you use like Patreon or Cameo or anything like that?
I mean, I started a Facebook page, same name.
Okay.
No, I don't know the Cameo system. It's like when people send out greetings.
I think Cameo is more for like, basically people will pay you. If you're like Jennifer Lopez, I might pay her $1,000 and she'd be like, oh my God, Carly, like happy birthday.
No, like send me a DM on Instagram and I will do that for you. Like we don't need to go there. If I can enlighten your day by saying your name, I will do so the next time I'm in drag. Like make me accountable.
Perfect. Wonderful.
I have 700 followers. Everyone else, like, yeah, like I can do them in 2 days.
Amazing. Well, Carly, thank you so much for sharing your time and your money memory. And we can't wait to see you on your name in lights in one of these days soon.
Okay. Take care. Thanks for having me again.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Make sure to visit our website at www.bearinthebull.com, where you can subscribe to the show in iTunes, Stitcher, or via RSS so you'll never miss an episode. While you're at it, if you like what you heard, please leave a rating on iTunes. Feel free to tell your friends about the show and connect with us on social media. See you soon.